Blog Talk Radio.
All opinions, comments, and representations made by the hosts of Brilliant Ideas Radio and their guests are strictly for entertainment purposes. Well, at least that's what we think we're doing. Entertaining you. Welcome to Brilliant Ideas Radio. Brilliant Ideas Radio keeps you informed about all the awesome products and people in the food industry. Brilliant Ideas Radio is about food, music, and most importantly, having fun with your friends. And now, here is the man with the master plan, Brilliant Ideas. So join the fun and call the studio number at 714-242-5272. Once again, the studio number is 714-242-5272.
Good morning, everybody out there in Blog Talk Radio land. This is Brilliant Ideas, and you're listening to the Brilliant Ideas Radio Show. We thank you for joining in with us each and every Saturday morning as we meet with a lot of our food friends and have musical entertainment and learn about food news and everything else in between. And I'd like to thank everyone for showing up again this Saturday, and we have a big show planned this Saturday. We have, of course, our one and only Joyzy girl, food news girl. She's joining us, Laurie, this morning to give us the food news. And after Laurie, we will be having a friend of many of you folks that are on Facebook. Probably know Brian. Brian Fairchild will be joining us to talk about wine and food for the holidays, and he's a wine expert, and I'm not, so it should be interesting. And last but not least, we have Matt Ritchie, who's a singer-songwriter, who'll be joining us for the last 30 minutes of the show. So welcome again. We look forward to trying to at least entertain you, and maybe you'll even learn something and laugh a little. And we have our food news girl, Laurie, on the line. Good morning, Laurie. How's everything in New Jersey?
Good morning. Everything's fine. It's a little raw here today, kind of cloudy, but that's okay.
That's New Jersey. You know what? It's actually a little raw. It's a little raw here in California. It's been raining for the last 2 days, and it's our rainy season. So from now until February, it'll be, I won't say raw like in New Jersey, but it'll be wet. So we get our rain for the next two or three months, and that's about it. But so how's everything going? How was your last week?
Oh, it was good. A good busy week, you know, doing some Christmas shopping here. So I love the crowds.
You love the crowds?
I have a big family to fly for, so. Yeah, I like the crowds. I come from a big family. I have no choice.
I think that's a woman thing. You guys like to go shopping and like the crowd. So what kind of news do you have for us today? Are we going to be talking about wine first, or are we straight to food?
Well, actually, I was going to skip the wine, being that you know, one of my very close friends, Brian Fairchild, is coming on, and he is a connoisseur of wine. So I thought we would skip this part and wait for him to, you know, to join us, and then we'll have a real good time for. He's going to teach us all about how to buy holiday wine, and pair them with our meals. So that'll be fun.
All right.
Yeah, one of my first articles I'm going to read is about tasty cake.
Pasty cakes. Okay, by the way, too, I just want to tell you, just so you know, that any notes that you sent to me, I could not get off my computer this morning, so I'm flying blindly like I usually do anyway, but I don't have any notes in front of me, so I don't know anything about any of your articles, so fire away, and I'll just follow along.
Okay. You're not going to throw me under the bus?
Well, not too many times, but that's what I'm supposed to do. That's what the host does, throws people under the bus.
Okay, well, it says tasty cake begins filling the holes left by Hostess.
Yeah.
And it says Philadelphia-based tasty cake owned by Flowers Foods. Isn't that a cute name? I want to own Flowers Foods. Sounds happy.
Only you would think about that being a cute name, but go ahead.
I saw that, and I'm like, that is the happiest name. Anyway, it says they're helping fill the void left by Twinkie maker Hostess Brand's bankruptcy liquidation. And it says, from suburban Boston, native David Weinstein says he got a happy surprise when he found fresh, tasty cake crimpets on the shelves formerly occupied by durable Hostess lines at the Shaw's Grocery in Stoughton, Massachusetts. I like the crimpets. I've had them before.
Yeah, they're not bad. I've had those. I think everybody probably has it. I mean, Tasty Cake's been around probably just as long as Hostess.
Yeah. But it says many of us who live in New England love the idea of having access to Tasty Cakes in the supermarket. How'd that happen? We had already been working on getting Tasty Cake into our stores, said Steve Slivin, spokesman for Shaw. But when Hostess announced its shutdown, we accelerated the rollout, and stores began receiving their first deliveries this past Saturday, and we expect all of our stores will be carrying the Tasty Cake by this Thursday.
So they didn't have Tasty Cake before the Hostess thing, huh?
No.
Wow. One man's problem is another man's opportunity.
I know. I was thinking of that. I know. Now, this will make you happy. Do you have Lucky Charms cereal? Do you ever have that?
Always after me, Lucky Charms. They're magically delicious, yes.
Well, it says, you know, some of these people are so smart when it comes to marketing. Tell ya. It says, Lucky Charms finds gold with adult fans. They are magically delicious and all grown up. Lucky Charms cereal, which for most of its 48-year history has targeted kids and is making a bigger play for adults in a new campaign expected to go national next year. I saw the commercial. It's really good. It's very brief, but it's just to the point. It's really cute. It says
What's it about? How can they target Lucky Charms towards adults?
Well, it looks like in the commercial there's a bowl of Lucky Charms sitting on a table, and it looks like the mother's walking in. It's supposed to be for the child. And she sees it, she has a spoon, and she tastes it and says, oh, I forgot how good these are. And that's it. And it just ends. But it's a really, it's almost, I mean, the color of it. It's just a very bright kind of color commercial. It's really good. Simple.
Well, yeah, well, they should change all those little marshmallows and they make them into like adult marshmallows, like race car, like, you know, fancy cars and diamond rings and that type of thing
cars.
For the adults.
Well, they actually do have a lot of different ones now that I didn't even realize. I'm trying to think if it even mentioned some of them. I think it mentions in the article what they are, but it says for brand owner General Mills, the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow are the adults who, as kids, grew up with Lucky the Leprechaun and are apparently running back to him in search for some feel-good nostalgia.
Huh. It's kind of like the Frankenberry and Blueberry and Count Chocolate we talked about a few weeks ago. So I guess they're targeting the nostalgia. And if, of course, you know what? Last time I probably had Lucky Charms, I was 12. I'm not sure. I don't know. I remember they're like giant. It's all it is sugar. So I don't know if they're going to get me back, though.
Well, you know what, though? No, because supposedly I'm going to keep reading because they are actually good for you. What was I going to say? I think the last time I used to have
Lucky
them.
Lucky Charms are, wait a minute, whoa, time out. Lucky Charms are good for you?
Yeah, listen to this. You're going to learn something.
All right, go ahead.
It says the percentage of Lucky Charms consumers who are adults has risen to 45%, said Greg Pearson, the brand's marketing manager. As a result, the brand posted its best volume year ever in fiscal 2012, according to General Mills. And overall, Lucky Charms is now the seventh largest cold cereal brand. As we've finally seen adults become this big, a part of our consumption, it really felt like the right time to target them directly. It says the adult campaign kicked off with a TV spot, that's what I saw, airing regionally, showing a woman rediscovering Lucky Charms at her office. Oh, it's at her office. I thought it was at her house. She is then transported for a brief moment to Lucky's magical forest where the animated leprechaun delivers his famous line, "You're always after me, Lucky Charms." Her response, "I forgot how good these taste." The brand also recently launched an adult-targeted Facebook page which recalls classic moments in Lucky Charms history, such as 1992, the debut of the rainbow marshmallow. I don't remember seeing that. So it must have been a long time.
Me either. Like I said, since I haven't eaten them since I was 12.
Well, it says here, this guy says, I was a husky 11-year-old in 1992, so needless to say, I remember this being a big deal. The adult campaign follows moves by other traditional kid cereal brands to go after the older consumers as marketers face more scrutiny about what foods should be advertised to children. See? And it says that Kellogg's Frosted Flakes, for instance, is running ads with Tony the Tiger that target the dads. I haven't seen that.
Nope, I haven't seen that.
Favorite word, though.
Yes, it is my favorite word.
It says the moves come as companies impose tougher self-regulations aimed at limiting the exposure of these certain foods to kids. So that's a good thing, though, you know?
Hey, guess what? We have a caller.
We do?
Yeah, you know what? I think it's a friend of ours. Hold on a second.
Sure.
Good morning. Hello. I can't believe it. He's here, Laurie. He's here.
Who's here?
Aaron.
Oh, my
God.
Hello, Laurie. Hi. How are you?
Fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing well.
You're missing the whole story about Lucky Charms. Do you eat Lucky Charms now?
I do not eat Lucky Charms now, but I grew up on Lucky Charms, and they were great, and I only ate the marshmallows.
Yeah, well, Laurie's getting ready to tell us that they're healthy for us, and I don't believe it, but how can they be healthy for us, Laurie?
Because they're oat and bran and grains all in, just don't need the marshmallows.
He's right. Okay, where did
they said, because it's General Mills, they used to always say that it was healthy for you.
Yep.
Well, I did not know that.
My favorite one was always the hearts, and it says the brand is reprising the Heart, Stars, and Clovers jingle that hadn't been used in more than a decade, and in January, the Lucky Charms will include 6 new Swirled Moon marshmallows for a limited time, and they will swim in the bowl alongside the usual hearts, stars. There's horseshoes, clovers, hourglasses, rainbows, and tasty red balloons. That sounds cute.
Hey, Aaron. Before you got here, she was telling us that they're going to be targeting adults with Lucky Charms and the big push for getting adults to start eating Lucky Charms again. I told her that they need to have marshmallows that were shaped like diamond rings and fancy cars and porn stars.
Dollar bills.
Type of thing.
dollar bills, y'all. I don't know if it needs to be shaped like diamond rings, but if you could shape one like a cheeseburger or, have a cheeseburger-shaped marshmallow and those kind of things.
That's a great idea. Boy, they should pay you for that idea. That's an adorable idea. Make one look like a little cheeseburger.
Lori, I'm a food genius. You have no idea.
I do now.
Well, Lori, you still haven't told me why they're good for you. Have you got to that part yet in your story?
Okay, you're designed here. It says also, as it is doing with all of its big G cereals, General Mills points out that Lucky Charms contains, quote, more whole grain than any other single ingredient. Still, it seems it's those mythical charms, not the grain, that is turning on the adults.
Wow. Well, you were right, Aaron.
Oh, yeah. They used to say that when I was a kid, that Lucky Charms was actually good for you if you didn't eat the marshmallows. I don't believe it. Because, first of all, the Lucky Charms themselves, without the marshmallows, are not tasty. So it can't be good for your soul, but it might be good for your body because any things that don't taste good are supposedly good for you, that kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah, that's never true.
It'd be like eating Brussels sprouts with chocolate. I mean, I could probably eat them if I had chocolate on them.
Yeah, but that's still just, it's one of those things that Brussels sprouts are not good for your soul. They actually poison your soul, and they're just bad. But they are really good for you.
Instead of chocolate, I would pack the butter on. I have bread with my butter. I'm a very bad butter person. I pack butter on things. So just pack some butter on those Brussels sprouts, and it's all good.
Hold on, bear with me one quick second. I'll be right
back. Okay. Can we keep talking?
Can you put us on mute like you always do? Maybe put us on mute.
Yes. So, okay, are we done with the Lucky Charms?
No, real quick, I wanted to read this thing because it's cute. It says, with the red balloons, that will bring the total number of marshmallow charms to an unlucky 13. The brand pioneered the use of the freeze-dried marshmallows for cereal back in 1963. And then it's really cute. It just says real quick here, Lucky, who made his debut as a mascot in 1964, got a brief scare in 75 when General Mills considered replacing him with something called Waldo the Wizard. What the heck? Why would they do that? But they didn't do it. It says, but as luck would have it, the little leprechaun survived. Yay!
Yay!
Yay! I thought it was a very cute article.
Very nice. What else?
Okay. Is Aaron still going? Because I was going to ask you guys. You guys, we talked about lobster before. I know you're not as
crazy. I don't know where Aaron went. I don't know if he went to the bathroom or what, but just keep going.
Well, this next article is about lobster for those who, most people love lobster, I would say.
I don't.
Because I know, but you're just rare.
Well, I am rare. I'm special, not rare. But yeah, you know, I've never been big on lobster. I don't know why. I mean, I can eat it, but it's never just been one of my favorite. But everybody always raves about, you know, having lobster. So whatever.
Oh,
I guess I'm just different.
When it's cooked to perfection, you dip it in that oozing and butter and the knuckles. My favorite are the knuckles.
Well,
anyway,
not me.
Scientists have figured out how to determine the age of a lobster by counting its rings like a tree. Nobody knows how old lobsters can live to be. Some people estimate they live to be more than 100. But knowing, rather than simply guessing their age and that of other shellfish, could help scientists better understand the population and assist regulators of the lucrative industry. That was a tongue. I couldn't do that one. Tongue twister on that one. Before now, It says, before now, the scientists deduced a lobster's age judging by the size and other variables, but it's now known that lobsters and other crustaceans, such as crab and shrimp, grow one ring per year in hidden away internal spots. So see, they're going to be able to talk about that. They'll figure out how old they are. We can sing happy birthday.
I'm confused. I missed you somehow. So they can tell how old they are by what?
Well, it says here they grow one ring per year in hidden away internal spots.
But you have to know where those special spots are, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I could say something about that, but I will leave it alone.
Oh my gosh!
There's a lot of things you have to know what a special spot is. But go ahead.
Oh yeah, yeah, you're going to be running with that one. We need Katarina on here for this part.
Yeah,
she's
do.
Better at you. Yeah. It says lobsters don't lose reproductive capabilities or organ functions or exhibit signs of aging as they get older.
Speaking of that.
Yeah. Yeah. But nobody knows for sure how old they can live to be.
Okay.
Oh my God, I thought I lost you for a moment.
All right, what else you got? Are we still talking lobsters?
No, I'm going to talk about if you like Jell-O.
Jell-O, yes. I love Jell-O.
You do?
Yeah, when you put vodka in it.
Like Jell-O shots?
Yes.
I've never done a Jell-O shot. Oh, I've never done a
You've
shot.
You've never done a Jell-O shot?
I've never done a shot.
Oh, my God.
No. It burns. It's not. It's abusing the body. No, I cannot do a shot, ever.
You can't? Well, we're going to have to change that. But Jell-O shots are great. It just slides down, and we'll have to change that. You didn't put it on your bucket list.
No, I'd be scared. I don't know how I would act. I have to be in control of myself.
Well, we'll let you know. We'll let you know what you did the next day.
Yeah, thanks. You'll take pictures and post it on Facebook.
Can you imagine the likes we'll get on those? So what about Jell-O?
Gosh. It says, tired of quivering in the shadow of other snack foods, Jell-O is about to embark on an aggressive campaign to reclaim its spot in American shopping carts. I always thought Jell-O was, like, really popular, but supposedly, I don't know. The 115-year-old brand will undergo a complete overhaul, from packaging to the introduction of products to make it something moms and kids are going to rediscover.
They need to bring Bill Cosby back. You know, he always made it so cool, Jell-O so cool.
That's the next line. That's so funny. It says, the company acknowledges it neglected its core audience, but it's going back to its original focus. The brand was hugely successful when comedian Bill Cosby was its spokesman for nearly three decades, starting in the 1970s. And that's so funny because I do associate Jell-O with him.
Yes, everybody does. Are they bringing him back?
But Jell-O has been fading from consumers' radars in the past decade. I don't think they're bringing him back.
Oh, they should, because he's like, when you see Bill Cosby, you think of Jell-O.
I know.
Of course, maybe he charges more now. Maybe, I don't know, though. He's getting older, so maybe his rate would have dropped now.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It says here only 10% of Americans say that they have eaten gelatin in the past 2 weeks, down from 15% in 1998.
Really? Well, you know, did you remember in school we used to have Jell-O? We had that green block of Jell-O red block of Jell-O at school?
It's boring. I think Jell-O is very boring. I mean, I feel bad saying that, but although I shouldn't say that. No. When I was watching my brother's dog, he went away. He went away to a wedding for a couple of days, and I stayed at their house, and they had the little chocolate Jell-O packs. They had three of them. They were all, I ate them all. I ate all three of them. So now
you
I'm
mean like the snack packs, you mean?
The snack ones, yes. I was thinking of the green and the the colored wiggly Jell-O.
Okay. Well, now my mother used to get really fancy. Did you ever have this where she would take a angel food cake and put Jell-O with fruit cocktail mixed in it on top of the angel food cake? You ever have that?
No.
Now that was high class back then.
That's creative. No.
Yeah, an upside down pineapple upside down cake, but it was angel food with Jell-O and remember the fruit cocktail in the can? She would mix it in there with the Jell-O and as a kid I used to have that all the time. I may have been the only kid in America that had it, but that's my mother used that. That was like a fancy dessert.
That is a fun. And did you have whipped cream with it too?
Whipped cream, the kind that you squirt out of the can. I mean, my brother and I used to take the can and, of course, squirt it all over the place. That was fancy night when you got the Jell-O with the fruit cocktail.
Wow. You were a lucky kid.
Oh, Aaron, are you there? No. Okay. What else we got about Jell-O?
Okay. Well, just as real quick here, I think consumption has gone down because nobody pushed it, nobody marketed it. I think that's pretty nice that these people, fess up to it, which is true. You know, for companies
right.
to say that, and just take the blame that they neglected it. They took it for granted. It says, consumers are turning to versatile foods. Here we go. You're going to be bored. Such as yogurt, granola, and energy bars.
Yeah,
so
no, we all get so healthy. I mean, come on, Jell-O.
For lunch or the snack.
What did Aaron say a little while ago? That Jell-O is good for the soul.
Yep. Here we go. Here's our Greek yogurt again. They said the consumption of Greek yogurt has nearly doubled in the past 2 years, with 32% of Americans saying they have eaten it at least once in a 2-week period.
All right, stop. You know what? You say you've never had Jell-O shots?
No, I never did.
I've never had Greek yogurt.
Well, I'm gonna. We gotta get you some Lebanese.
Okay.
I'll do it for you. I'll make it. I'll put olive oil, the salt and pepper, the Greek olives, and I'll give you some Syrian bread, and then you'll eat it just like that.
All right. And then I'll make the Jell-O shots.
I have a little bite of the Jell-O shot.
All right. Yeah, we'll see. Yeah. Okay. So what else you got? Go to the next story. You got 5 minutes.
I do? Oh, my gosh.
Yep.
Sorry, you'll love this. You'll be happy. Sorry, vegans. Eating meat and cooking food is how humans got their big brains.
Really? And that's funny because they think we're all pea brains because we eat meat. That's funny. I like that.
I know. I knew you would like that. I was really surprised. I read this is a good article. It says, eating meat and cooking food made us human, the study suggests, enabling the brains of our pre-human ancestors to grow dramatically over a few million years. Although this isn't the first such assertion from archaeologists and evolutionary biologists, the new studies demonstrate that it would have been biologically implausible for humans to evolve such a large brain on a raw, vegan diet, and that meat eating was a crucial element of human evolution at least a million years before the dawn of humankind.
All right.
And you would like
that. See? That, in other words, that just means we're all smart because we eat meat.
That's right. It says here, it's an interesting term. Humans have exceptionally large, neuron-rich brains for our body size, while the gorillas, three times as massive as humans, have smaller brains with one-third the neurons. And why? The answer is
because they eat bananas and berries.
Yeah. It says the gorillas eat raw, vegan diet, which requires hours upon hours of eating to provide them enough calories to support their mass.
So what you're saying is, now I can tell people that are vegans that tell them they're as dumb as a baboon?
Oh, no.
Oh.
You just laughed someone, you laughed at yourself.
Well, you said the gorilla's got a pea brain because they eat vegan. So I'm just you know, correlating the story, that's all.
Okay, just so you know, I just popped back in. Did someone just say gorillas have a pea brain? I don't understand what I just missed out on.
The story says that the reason we have big brains is back in evolutionary times. The reason we have big brains is because man was a eater. And she said, that's why our brains are so big. And then she said that gorillas have a small brain because what? They eat bananas and vegan type food. So I just correlated the whole story to say, well, does that mean that vegans are dumb as a baboon?
Ooh, that's a special subject. I'm going to keep my mouth shut on that one because I have a whole theory on that.
I know. I'm not going there.
Well, they think we're idiots because we eat meat, so now we got scientific proof.
But did you know that what started the evolution of the human brain was when what really sparked it and caused dramatic growth was when we went from eating raw to cooking our food?
Ah, the barbecue grill did it, huh?
When we started cooking our food, that's what sparked the true development of the human brain and leapfrog us into the next point of evolution in our history.
Yeah,
so
really.
grilling and cooking over open fire is the root of our civilization today.
No, he's right. I mean, I can't believe you know this. Aaron, you're unbelievable because you know what? It did say that about starting to cook the meal. What did it say about cooking? Okay, something about humans were nearly fully evolved with big brains, which is supported by archaeological findings, or was it about 800,000 years ago when prehumans began their most dramatic brain growth spurt, an era for which there is little archaeological evidence of controlled fires for the cooking? It's kind of like, I don't know, it's kind of garbled there the way it's worded, but it says about the cooking.
I got to tell a quick story.
We started cooking our food, that's when we started growing.
I got to tell this quick story. Two nights ago, it was late at night, and I was flipping through the radio station. And do you ever come across like a religious station, and you start listening to it, and you're not really sure why you're listening to it, but you start listening to it? And there was some guy, I think he was a preacher, talking, and he was talking about Hohab and Mobab and Moses and all those guys. But the thing that he talked about was he said that those guys were the first grillers because God made sure that whenever he sent them food, he told them to make sure they cooked it over an open fire. So it was just it was kind of interesting. I flipped through that. I think God directed me to hear that.
Definitely. Unbelievable.
All right, you got 52 seconds, Laurie. You got a quick story?
You know what? I really do. As a matter of fact, thank you, Sunbless, for this one. It's at the end. It's a zoop zoop. Let me find it real quick. Okay. She sent me this article about Blue Diamond announces record sales year of $1 billion. Did you ever have Blue Diamond wasabi-flavored almonds?
No.
Aaron, did you? Is he still there?
He's gone again.
So I'm kind of here, but I'm just people walking by. And sorry. I'm on scene. I'm on site actually working today while we're while we're doing this. I've got all kind of ridiculousness going on.
Aw, well, you're a true diehard. Thank you. At least you're here.
Yes, you are.
No, I was asking if you ever had wasabi-flavored almonds.
Yes, they're my absolute favorite. I buy them probably twice a week.
Do you really? Oh, my gosh. I love them. And I'm going to tell you something, but okay. I actually lick my finger, and then I scoop it all around the bottom of the can.
Oh, yeah. I cannot leave anything. When I'm done, I clean the can out. I do that. It's ridiculous. It has gotten so bad that I go to Publix, and I buy wasabi peas at Publix. Wasabi peas? So I get the wasabi peas, and even if I only have regular raw almonds left, I can pop wasabi peas and raw almonds, and it's a little bit cheaper than buying the Blue Diamond wasabi almonds, but still absolutely delicious.
I know. Well,
I've never had that. I'm about to try that out.
Wasabi almonds are the best.
They really are. They're addicting. I'm telling you, it's really bad. I could sit down with that whole can and eat it. But it just says
that's the problem. If you get a can, you're going to eat the whole can.
You what?
In one sitting.
And you can lick the bottom. Yeah.
Yep. I cut my tongue one time. I tried to lick the bottom.
While you guys are over there licking your fingers and tongue, I got to go to the next segment here. And, oh, my God, my screen just died. I literally have a black screen.
Oh, no. Can you bring in Brian?
Laurie, do you have any more stories?
No. Well, that's a story in itself.
I have a story.
I got to literally reset. Tell a story and make it long.
While you're resetting, so have either of you ever watched Duck Dynasty?
Yeah.
Oh, I used to watch Dynasty all the time.
So Duck Dynasty, one of my favorite shows, the whole thing. So, you know, I'm sitting here and I'm at this flea market thing and I'm working and I'm selling stuff and whatever. The guy next to me, I swear to God, is Cy Robertson. And it's a crazy old man from Doug Dynasty. I swear to God. And he comes over telling me how he's had surgery and his arteries replaced all the way from his ankles to his heart. They replaced all his arteries and veins. It's just like I'm losing my mind listening to this guy next to me. That's the extent of my story. How do you replace all of your arteries and veins?
All of them?
But, yeah. So he drew a trowel showing me his scars. In the middle of the flea market.
You do find some interesting characters there at the flea market.
Well, now I could understand if I brought Hang Bob with me. I could totally understand. God, these children's hanging out with me. If I'm in here, if I can Hang Bob with me and we're selling stuff at the flea market, I get it. But it's just me.
Brilliant. Is your screen back? Can you bring? Oh, I hear it.
No,
oh, I hear you.
You need to find another story. You guys need to keep talking. Literally, I'm resetting again. My computer system died.
What about Brian Pressow? Is he calling
in? I can't get to Brian because I have no screen to press his button.
Oh, no.
So this is live radio at its best right now. So hey, Aaron, you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so what exactly are you doing there at the flea market? What are you selling?
A little bit of everything. I have almost a complete set of Southern Living cookbooks, if any of you are familiar with Southern Living cookbooks.
I love Southern Living cookbooks, yes.
Well, I have a complete set all the way back to, I think I have, what's the oldest? Hold on, I'll tell you in just one second. 1982? 81?
Nope. Wow.
In good condition?
They're in great condition. All the way back to 1981 is the oldest I have.
Wow.
So from 81 till last year, selling Southern Living cookbooks and just odd and end stuff. I sold 400 DVDs this morning.
Aaron, yeah. I say Playboy. You say Southern Living.
Southern. See, that's the thing is, I've always been a weird kid. I didn't pick up all of the Playboy magazines. I picked up Southern Living. There's something wrong with me.
No, you're just a foodie. And we don't even know what brilliant is.
So am I.
No, I know, but
it's food for the eyes.
You are. You're just the typical.
Guys, literally, something's wrong with my computer, and I have my computer screen keeps dying on us. So you guys got to keep. You have to come up with some more things to talk about. Laura, you have no more food news?
No, I do, but you were cutting me off.
Tell us some more food news while I try to reset.
Okay, but I was going to say, too, though, I know Brian can hear us. I'm sure he's listening in,
yes.
So he knows we're having a problem. So, Brian, wait, I know you're there for us, and
we're sorry, but I can't do anything when I got a screen that doesn't light up. So, Laurie, tell us some more food news.
Okay, let me find some more stuff here for you guys. Let's see here. We talked about the vegans. I'm scrolling down. Oh, Kobe beef. Oh, have you guys ever had Kobe beef?
I have. It's really good.
Yes. Yeah. And typically when you have it, it's not really Kobe beef, by the way.
That's the truth.
Just saying. Most of the time when you get Kobe beef in a restaurant, it's not really Kobe beef. But I'll just throw that out there.
Thank you.
But yeah, Kobe beef is awesome. Huh?
You threw it and I caught it.
Is that your story? Are you kidding? You're kidding me right now.
What happened?
Are you kidding me? Did I just ruin the story? Was it, is that what your story
no,
was about?
No, you didn't ruin the story.
No,
tell
no,
the
no,
Kobe,
it was
Kobe
no,
beef
no,
story.
No, you just riot. No, it just says.
Oh,
I
thought I was gone.
No, it says Kobe beef set to be exported to the U.S. It says a group of producers of Kobe beef said it will start exporting the delicacy to the United States the first time the product has ever been exported to a destination outside Asia.
Well, there you go. Then he's right. He's right. Then what I was told was Kobe beef was not Kobe beef.
It is not actually Kobe beef. No. Anytime you get in a restaurant, you're not having Kobe beef. Well, there are moments. There are times. There are places. But for the most part, when you go and you get, they go to a place like Bonefish Grill, which is a chain restaurant, they tell you it's Kobe beef. It's not really Kobe beef.
Right. Yeah. So in Vegas, I've had it at some of the finer restaurants. It's just unbelievable. It's extremely... Extremely, it's so rich. I mean, literally, it's like a quarter. I can't eat more than like a quarter of it. That's how rich it is. It's like.
But Laurie, read that first line. But read that first line of your story again.
No, different restaurants can bring it in. Las Vegas can do anything. It's Vegas.
Well,
Vegas can do anything. There are probably a couple of places in New York that have it. Places in California, and then definitely in Vegas. So, I mean, I'm sure there are places that have it, but for the most part, when you go just to, like, a chain restaurant, you're not getting Kobe beef.
Yeah. Like it says here, filet, loin, and other parts from 5 cows will be shipped from a meat vendor and delivered to 2 steakhouses in San Francisco. Oh, I'll have to go visit my friend Jane Bonacci. We'll go there and dine. Kobe beef comes from the Tajima breed of cattle raised under special conditions, and the beef is known for its tenderness and high degree of fat marbling. We think people in a major meat-consuming country like the U.S. will also have an interest in Kobe beef. Exports of Kobe beef began this year, and about 10 tons has been exported to Macau and Hong Kong. Wow.
So are you saying it's going to be available, like, in supermarkets, or I'm confused?
No, I think that was, didn't it say that right? It just said it's going to be shipped to 2 steakhouses in San Francisco.
Oh, okay. All right, what else you got? Because I'm still working on my computer here.
Does it seem like it's going to be okay?
We'll see in a minute. Brian, if you're out there listening, hang on. We're trying to get back to the screen where I can bring you on to the show. But Laurie's going to have to keep reading food news in the meantime.
Okay, it says here, groceries make green by going green. From cage-free to paper towels made from 100% recycled paper, demand for ecologically conscious and organic grocery shopping in Southwest Florida stores is strong and growing. In an effort to compete with a new wave of specialty grocers that have set up shop locally in the past decade, including Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, and I haven't heard of this one, the Fresh Market? Is that
yes.
You got?
That's out here in California, yes.
I have Fresh Market here, too.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay. It says more and more mainline grocers are adding organic and green items to stay competitive. This is because grocers like Publix, Winn-Dixie, and Sweet Bay, I think that's down south, too, have deduced that even in times where budget-conscious consumers are wary of high food bills, specialty stores like the Whole Foods Market, which sells organic milk for $5.99 a gallon, are gaining in popularity. Those specialty markets, typically in wealthier areas where customers can afford to spend more.
Or in bad weather areas.
I know. Yeah, or they're like, oh, my God, doesn't make sense. I'm reading, going, why isn't that sound right? But consumers in general are seeking greater selection and healthier alternatives despite these higher prices. And it says these upscale grocers have really upped the bar in terms of what's available to shoppers and are now being available to more people. What is that noise? Sounds like a dentist. Sounds like a drill.
It's probably Aaron in the background. I think he's building something.
I'm not building anything, but people are just trying out tools and stuff across the way from me.
They're doing what?
They're dude across the way is selling tools, and they're turning on their drills and stuff.
See? I was right. Name that sound.
By the way, I just had to say something about that organic and all that other stuff.
Yep.
Why do people feel like they have to pay so much for that? When they've proven that it's not as good for you, and there are some health safety issues with some of that organic things. I don't understand why people think it's better for you. And once again, I'm ticking off all the vegans, all the natural people, everybody out there today, along with religious people talking about God and barbecue. So I'm just on a roll here today. But people are paying for it in the wealthy areas. But seriously, some of the problems that we've seen in food safety has come from some of that organic stuff.
I know.
The only reason that I could tell you is I know there are so many people who are now switching and moving towards like primal paleo diets. So they're looking for...
What was that word?
Can you repeat that? Because I don't know that. What's the diet?
Primal or paleo diet. Paleo is like paleolithic period. You know, they eat paleo food, so it's more like eating like cavemen eat.
Okay.
That's the whole... Which is a diet philosophy that I follow. But they look for organic stuff because there are no chemicals. And I don't go spend all the money on like organic milks and all that foolishness. You know, I'm not all about having the organic stuff, but I do like grass-fed beef, which has no chemicals, has no food. It's not been given any injections of anything. Just grass-fed beef, free-range grass-fed beef, free-range chickens, free-range eggs. You know, that kind of those kind of things. I do like that kind of stuff. But I don't pay a premium for it. I raise that at my house.
Wow.
So, I mean, the only reason I can think of is that, you know, people are trying to follow those type of things and keeping all the additional chemicals and additives out of your system.
Yeah.
But don't you think that maybe that's another reason why we're living longer, because we're being preserved?
I think it is. All the preservatives that have gone in, the yellow number 5, which is in everything, which is the leading cause of ADHD in this country. But, yeah, that's in everything, in cheese and milk and everything. But, yeah,
I got good news. I actually have my screen back.
Yay!
All right. So what I'm going to do is I'm not going to play around too much here because if it cuts off again, I might lose Brian. I'm going to bring Brian Fairchild along with us to talk about wine and food for the holidays. So he's still there. Brian, sorry for the delay, but we're back on with you. Are you there? Good morning.
Good morning. Do you have me?
We have you. Sorry,
we're having technical difficulties, but I saw you, but I couldn't
press your button.
I was about to set the alarm and set, you know, and take a nap, you know. But you know what?
Like,
I mean,
what?
I don't even want to talk about wine anymore because I mean, the thought of talking about Lucky Charms just, you know, that's got to be the best, and Jello shots. You know, we could do a lot with Jello shots and being brilliant eating meat. Well, we know that pork fat rules, so you know, eat bacon and you're going to be smart. But let's talk about wine.
All right. Well, everybody, before you get started, Brian, everybody, if you read on our little blurb here on the show, Brian is, I'm going to call you a connoisseur of fine wines, Brian. And
connoisseur? I don't know.
I'll tell you right now, Brian, I'll tell you right now, I do not swirl the glass. I do not swirl the glass. Most of my wine comes with a screw top. So you need to educate. You need to educate me on the proper wines for the holiday.
Well, we're going to talk about. We're going to have a little conversation about your dollar store wines. You know, we're going to work on that. So,
Brian, are you wearing sunglasses?
Am I wearing sunglasses? Of course. I'm not talking about anything else. I'm not talking about anything else I'm wearing, but I'm wearing sunglasses.
Is that because? Oh, never mind.
Hey, Aaron, how are you?
Fantastic, man. How are you?
I'm great. I'm great. So, what do you want to ask me about wine?
Well, I'm gonna let Laurie, since she's a lot more highfalutin than we are. Well, at least that I am.
Yeah,
Laurie,
but you know, she's never had a Jello shot. I don't know.
I know.
I think she's a virgin, you know? I don't know if we can trust her to ask me about wine. She hasn't had a Jello shot.
Brian, you met me. I'm very dainty. Can you picture me doing a shot? I never did a shot in my life.
Wait. I have one question for you because I listened to last week's show. I want to know if you were wearing heels when you went shopping on Black Friday.
I had these kind of like pretty cool looking ankle boots, black boots, and not too high, maybe like 2.5 inches.
Okay, all right. I could just imagine you in your heels trying to trample through the crowd.
Hey, Brian.
I know, Brian. Everybody thinks
yes,
I'm
sir.
I tell you, you could be assured I wasn't wearing heels when I went on a Black Friday.
Well, I mean.
That is a lie. That is a bold-faced lie. You were wearing heels. I've got video of it. That's a lie.
We're not going to talk about that. We're not going to talk about that. But let's talk wine. Talk to me, Laurie.
Educate us about wine.
Yep.
Talk to me, Laurie.
Well, Brian, what I thought might be nice is first tell the people who are listening how you got into the wine business and you know, how you became like the love of wine and an expert and just kind of like a brief little synopsis for everybody.
Well, first of all, if you think I'm an expert, I've definitely pulled the wool over your eyes. My philosophy when it comes to wine, and I'm being honest now, when I was in retail and people would come to me and say, oh, you know all about this about wine, and I'd hold up my fingers and I'd hold them apart about a half an inch, and I'd say, well, if you guys know this much, and I'd open them up to about 3/4 of an inch to 1 inch, and I'd say, that's what I know, because there's so much to know. You know, and you can't, and what you can't let yourself do is get intimidated by, you know, people who put themselves in front of you and say, well, you need to do this, you need to do that. Wine is really very, very personal. You know, it's a very personal experience, and people have to find their own comfort zones and drink what they like. Now, I could recommend things to you, but, you know, it ultimately comes down to what you like. Now, let's go away from the expert part. I'm not an expert. I'm someone who loves to educate. I got into this business after being in music for a very long time. We moved down here for my wife to take a job at the University of Richmond, and she's like, well, what are you going to do? Do you want to continue doing what you're doing, or are you going to do something else? And I told her I'm going to go get a job in a wine shop because – you know, I had passion for it. I have a passion for food, and it was a perfect outlet for me to, you know, kind of reinvent myself and, you know, get away from music, although I still perform, and do something different. So I got into the wine business. You know, one thing led to another. I was a salesperson, you know, then I became a manager, and then I was the buyer for a chain of stores, and then I lost my passion for that end, and I said, okay, it's time to go into wholesale. So here I am now. You know, I work in wholesale, selling wine to wine shops and restaurants and groceries and, you know, and whatnot, and educating people on that end so that they can educate their customers.
Now, do you sell – I have to ask a question. Do you sell all kinds of wine from different regions of the world or the country, or do you specify – certain products on the East Coast? What kind of products do you sell?
Well, no, we sell. Our company started out as mostly an Italian importer, but we've branched out, and we have wines from all over the world, and, you know, even some unusual places that you wouldn't think of, like Switzerland. And now we have a portfolio within our portfolio where we're focusing on getting wines from, you know, all of the 50 United States. There's at least one appellation designated in each state where they make wine from their own product. You know, and what better way to stimulate our own economy and be Americans than to, you know, to buy American wine.
Right.
You know, and there's so much more out there than, you know, California, Oregon, and Washington and New York State and, you know, my state of Virginia, which is number four or number five in production now.
Wow.
So, yeah, but we get all over the globe with what we do. And, you know, my experience in retail, I got to know wines from everywhere. And also being a collector back in New York, you know, you just get to know your product really well.
Yeah.
So what's some of the favorite wines for the holidays?
For the holidays, when I was working in retail, I would get customers come in and say, I'm going to a party, I don't know what to bring, you know. I'm going to someone's house for dinner, they're having this, but I don't know what to bring, I don't know what they like. You got to be careful, so you have to, you know, you have to go for the crowd pleasers. A lot of people associate with Chardonnay, a lot of people associate with Merlot. They're usually easy wines to bring that enough people will like. Pinot Grigio is another one that we associate well with in this country, or bubbles. Bubbles are the perfect thing to bring to parties. They're the perfect thing for holidays. And I've always been a strong supporter of alternatives to champagne, and it has nothing to do with, you know, not wanting to buy French wine. I happen to love French wine, and I'm a big supporter of French wines. But when I look at the price of champagne, because it's a labor-intensive process, I want to find alternatives that are cheaper. There are, you know, there are Proseccos, there are Cremants from other parts of France, there are sparkling wines from all over the world that are a lot cheaper than champagne that serve a great purpose. The two best ones as far as value are concerned would be Prosecco and Cava's from Spain.
Yeah, I need to talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, Cava, you know, especially, you know, when you get up Sunday morning and you want to have your mimosa and you don't want to pour a bottle of champagne into that orange juice, you know, you use a Cava or you know, a bottle of Prosecco, it's perfect, you know.
We all know Laurie's favorite almond champagne.
Almond champagne?
Yeah.
Or Almadin? Champagne in a box?
Yeah. No. Almond champagne. Brian, did you ever have that?
Almond champagne? No.
Yep.
You've stumped me.
They sell it at Trader Joe's, and is that the one that comes from Wilson Creek?
Wilson Creek. Yep.
Yep.
They sell it at Trader Joe's, and it's made from almonds.
Yep.
Well, I think it's got a almond flavoring, is what it is. I don't think it's actually made from almonds.
Oh, well, that's a good question. Yeah, that I don't know. Maybe
it's a good question.
Place.
We'll have to research that, Food News Girl, and find that out next week.
I'll have to check that out. But you know, no disrespect to Trader Joe's or any of the grocery stores, but I'll tell you, I'm a big, big supporter of small, family-owned and operated businesses. They keep my business going. And when I look at how, especially, you know, the past couple of years, I've seen so many independent retailers go out of business in my city, Richmond, Virginia. And these are people that I've known as customers, I've known as friends, and it just kills me to see the hard work that they put in go down the drain. You can go to the grocery store and you can pick anything off a shelf, but here we're talking about how do you pick holiday wines. Well, you want to go talk to someone. you know, you go to the butcher, you know, you want to trust your butcher. You want a good piece of fish, you go to your fishmonger, and you want to trust him. Well, it's the same thing with going to any other small boutique shop. You know, you got to trust these people. You want to trust these people. And by going to their shops and supporting them and trusting them, you're keeping them in business, and you're keeping what I feel is the real heartbeat of, you know, of the country alive.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you go to these places, you know, you pick their brains and say, "Hey, I'm having, you know, filet mignon for dinner tonight. What should I get?" And the first response, like when I was in retail, would be, "Okay, what do you like to drink? Let's break it down from, let's see if you like red wines or white wines." And let me tell you, I have no problem with people drinking what they like. There are no rules with me. If you want to drink white wine with your steak, it's fine. It's what you like.
Right.
It's part of the reason why I didn't become a sommelier and work in a restaurant. And, you know, I've got a lot of friends that are sommeliers, and they're there to help you, you know. But, you know, they feel kind of obligated to stick to traditional rules often. And I'm not that way. You know, it's all about what you like, what makes you feel comfortable. But,
well,
you know,
Brian,
if they say, "Well, I trust you."
I'm a big Shiraz fan. So what, in an inexpensive Shiraz, what do you recommend?
Oh, there are so many producers out there in Australia. I mean, I couldn't tell you anymore. I actually have gotten away from all of the, you know, being in wholesale and dealing with one portfolio, you kind of lose track of a lot of what's out on the market, because
right.
I don't necessarily shop the same way as I used to or when I worked in retail and I was buying. But there are so many good producers out there that make Shiraz. I'm not a big fan of Yellowtail, and I'm sorry for
me
anybody
either.
That likes
you
it.
No, me either.
Yeah, I mean, it's big mass-produced wine, and quite honestly, I don't even know if all that juice comes from Australia, because they make billions upon billions of bottles, and, you know, are they getting all that juice from Australia? It's possible not. So I'm not a big fan of that, but there are, you know, if you go to your small retailer and you say, "Hey, I like a Shiraz," I always trust the retailer to, you know, to offer you a good bottle. And I usually recommend to people when they ask me, "What should we ask for?" I'll say, "Well, ask for something that your shop owner knows is from a small producer." This is what my company specializes in. We deal with small family-owned and operated producers. So, you know, when the producer is smaller, you know, there's a little bit more attention to detail, or I should say a lot more attention to detail. So this is the direction I like to go in with selecting wines, is I like to, you know, like I'm saying, "Hey, let's support our economy. Let's support our small family-owned and operated businesses here. Well, let's also support the small family-owned and operated wineries." You know, a big cooperative can collect juice from, you know, all over the place, dump it into big stainless steel tanks, and pour it out into bottles and put, you know, anybody's label on it. But a small winery, a small producer, you know, is involved in every aspect of winemaking. So you know that there's a real attention to detail, and they're making quality product. And they're not necessarily going to be that much more expensive than the mass-produced ones. So, you know, when you say, "What's a good Shiraz?" I say, get something from a small producer.
Let me ask you this. How much emphasis do you put on, like, the ratings of Wine Spectator and Wine Enthusiast and those people with the numbers that they publish?
I don't. I actually
don't.
I read, you know, I read the publications because I need to be aware of this stuff, especially if, you know, we get scores on some of our own product, which is not that often because we deal with small producers who don't make enough to get involved in sending cases here and sending cases there and getting into all the, all of the magazines. They do get involved in their own local competitions, like, in Italy, you have Vinitaly, you have the Gambero Rosso reviews. But I do read them, but I've read so many reviews where they posted a wine and they trashed the wine, you know, and they published a price, and I'm like thinking, you know what? I paid less money than they're publishing for this wine, and I like the wine. So who cares? Again, it's about what you like.
Well, here's what I do. When I go to the store, I look at the Wine Spectator and the Wine Enthusiast numbers, and then I do the square root of pi divided by 2, subtract 33, and
wait,
I say,
that's too much math for me.
Yeah, and I say, $1.99, I'll take it.
I mean, look, even we who are a direct importer and sell directly to our customers can't beat that price. but you know, you got a stronger stomach than I do.
In California, in all honesty, there's a lot of wines that are under $4 that are very good because I guess.
Oh yeah, I mean, look, look at Two Buck Chuck. Look what happened with that. And
exactly.
I actually, once when we first bought our house, I had a whole bunch of wines from a specific vintage, California wines from a specific vintage. I wanted to open and drink, so I invited some friends over to what I called an open house, empty house, because we had no furniture or anything. Everybody brought chairs, and you know, and so I did this. You know, a vertical tasting would be, you know, consecutive years. I did what we would call a horizontal tasting of one vintage, one year in California. It was 1997, I think. And in the middle of it, I had thrown a bottle in a brown bag. And it was a bottle of Two Buck Chuck that one of my customers, when I was in retail, had brought me because we were talking about it one day. And I said, you know, I haven't even had the wine. And I guess she bought a case of it and brought me a bottle. I'm like, I put this in the middle, and all of these people with great palates, they couldn't figure out which one was the Two Buck Chuck.
Oh, my gosh. That's amazing.
It was really funny.
To a certain degree, there's a lot of truth to that. If they don't know, if they think it's fancy, they'll like it. Well, Brian, I hate to cut you short, but we actually, because of my technical difficulties,
that's cool. We'll be on again.
I'm running up against
more.
The next guest, and I appreciate you coming on. And matter of fact, we'll have you on again and come back with some suggestions on different wines that we might want to be interested in looking at that are in my kind of price range and also in the fancy pants price range. And you're welcome to come back anytime.
Not a problem. I appreciate it. Thanks for having
me
on.
Thanks a lot, Brian. Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, that was Brian Faratile. You guys can find him on Facebook. Just punch in Brian Faratile, and I think he's going to be coming on some other times to give us some more wine input and suggestions. And we've got our next guest coming on next, Matt Ritchie. Laurie, I guess we're done with food news, and I'll let you go since I've tied you up for almost an hour.
Yes, it was fun. And bye, Aaron, if you're still there, too.
Hi, Lori.
Oh, yes, I am.
I was trying to keep the drill noise down, and I didn't want to jump in and talk about wine only matters to me on how drunk it gets me and that kind of stuff. So, you know, I kind of... I figured I'd let that go.
That's exactly what I was thinking. That's what I was thinking. The whole time I was saying, well, after the first bottle, that's what the lady told me at the
after I drank bottle number one,
it doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, my thing was, after I drank my first bottle of Publix wine, then you can bring me all the yellowtail you want, and I don't care what it tastes like, because I'm just getting drunk.
Oh, my gosh, this was fun, you guys. Hey, listen, have a great weekend and a great week ahead.
All right, you too.
See you later.
All right, bye-bye. Our next guest is Matt Ritchie, and I'm going to take a brief break here and try to get everything back up and going here and get us back on schedule. Matt Ritchie is a singer-songwriter, and I'm going to play one of Matt's songs. It's called Hurricane, and while I'm playing the song, Aaron, you can go out there and work with the drill bit guy and come back if you can. All right, this is Matt Ritchie's song. It's called Hurricane. We'll be back with Matt Ritchie after we hear some of his music. That was Matt Ritchie, Hurricane, and we'd like to welcome Matt to our show this morning. If everything's working right, we should have Matt. Good morning, Matt.
Hey, how are you?
All right, welcome to the show, and I think I got my sidekick back with me. Are you there, Aaron?
What up? Yeah, I'm here.
Matt, welcome to the show, and I understand you're a guy that's down there in Birmingham, Tuscaloosa, that area, singing your stuff.
Yeah.
So how'd you get into the music business?
I just started playing open mics at local bars in the Birmingham area and kind of met some people and just kind of went on with that. Started playing some solo gigs and then formed a band, and we started doing the college thing, mainly covers now. I'm back to doing mostly originals.
Now, these songs here that we're playing, are these these your original songs?
Yeah, they're all original songs.
Now, people want – I didn't actually have a website for you. I was looking for a website when I got your information, but if people wanted to find out more about you and find your music, can they find you online through a website or through Facebook?
Yeah, they can go to ReverbNation/Matt Ritchie.
Okay.
I don't have an official website yet.
So where do you play now? In bars or and do you have like can give us a rundown of what a Matt Ritchie week is in the music business?
Right now it's been mostly just recording with my friend Will from Ages Apart, and we've just been trying to get some better recordings down and playing a couple of bar gigs here and there to pay the bills. Just riding a lot right now.
Well, you know how that is, right, Aaron? Yeah, we lost.
Yeah, I definitely know how that is. No, yeah, in Las Vegas, my phone was messing up. And I ain't going anywhere.
So that song Hurricane, is there a background story to the song Hurricane as far as why you wrote it?
Actually, I wrote it when I was, I think, 17 or 18 and finally recorded it. I don't really remember what I wrote it about, to be honest. I just wrote it.
You just wrote it.
Yeah.
Hey, believe me, sometimes I do things and I don't remember why I do it either, but that's because I'm drinking too much alcohol usually, what causes that.
Yeah, I think it was about a girl. We'll go with that. That sounds good.
Well, what are your plans for the future?
Right now I'm debating on going back to school in the spring or fall or keeping on with the music. So we'll see. Maybe going back to school though.
Now are you working with Mandy Moore?
Yes, I am.
And she's trying to find some gigs for you, and she's really good. She brings a lot of talent to our show, and I got the information. I thought it was through Mandy, and I think she'll do a real good job for you, and she's a real super person to work with. Aaron, I've lost my screen again. By the way, I'm sorry, Matt. We're having technical difficulties today. So it's just been one of those days. What I'm trying to do now is get back to your music. But, yeah, Mandy does a really good job, and she's bringing lots of talent to us. And so do you actually have a CD that's been cut?
I don't right now. That's what we're working on. Just getting that product out on CD Baby and stuff, iTunes.
Do you have, like, a release date planned?
Probably, yeah, shoot for late January, early February, I think. We were going to work on it this week, but I've been sick with the flu crud all week, so.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's kind of fun.
I know that feeling. I was sick myself. So, the actual CD itself, I was looking at your music and kind of listening to it. What kind of, I guess the fancy word is genre. What kind of genre would you say your music is? Is it blues or what would you call it?
I guess blues or singer-songwriter type stuff really is what I'm going for, I guess.
You've opened for quite a few groups and bands. Who have you opened for?
Ingram Hill, Michael Warren, Benji Davis.
And you got any plans for any, are you be opening for anybody else in the coming next few months?
Not right now. Hopefully something will come up. Those things seem to come up out of the blue, mostly at Zydeco in Birmingham.
Hey, Aaron.
Yeah.
You're a musical. You got any musical questions for our man while I'm trying to get his music back on my screen again?
No, you pretty much run through the gamut of questions. Release dates, who you open for, when you're opening, when's the next show. I think you've hit all those good questions. I do have one question, though. When are we going to upgrade
that?
Our computer? That's the first question.
It's sad. I mean, I literally...
No, Matt, get on, man. You don't have a radio show. You got to upgrade your equipment.
I guess. I don't know what the problem is. It's just that all of a sudden my screen went to complete black and I can't get anything. And it keeps doing it. And I literally cannot get to our music screen or anything. I'm right now looking. It's, a minute ago it was black. Now it's white.
That's not good. I wish I knew about wine. We could keep talking about wine. I don't know anything about
or
wine.
Now that you brought up the rest of it, is it black or white? I mean, we could talk about Michael Jackson the rest of the day when you do.
Yeah, that's
keep it on music.
Music related.
Music related. Keep it on music.
Well, Matt, I'm really sorry because I literally cannot get to my music file because I'm literally looking at a screen that is completely black and I can't see it. So, do you want to talk about wine or Michael Jackson? We can until I figure this out.
I don't know about
Michael
Jackson.
Give us a live acoustic. Give us a live acoustic jam.
There you go. You got the guitar handy?
I don't have a guitar around me. So. I'm sure it sounds awesome through the phone.
Well, I hate to do this, but I'm going to have to probably cut the interview short and not be able to play any music, because every time I reboot, all I'm getting is this freaky-looking screen, and we can't even get to your music. So, Matt,
no worries.
I'll tell you what I'll do. Next week, if I have a computer that works, I will actually play your music on next week's show and send people your way to your website. And we'll play it first part of the show next week and get the little songs you sent to me so everyone can hear your music. And I apologize, but everything has just gone kaput here on me.
It's all right. No worries. We'll look forward to it next week.
Well, listen in next week, and you'll get to hear your music.
Oh, yeah. I still got the link.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for joining us. I'm sorry for this, but, guys, we can't play music right now.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
All right. Take care.
Hey, man, I hope you get to feeling better, man.
I appreciate it, guys. Take care.
No problem.
Well, Mr. Flea Market Drill Bit wine drinking guy,
that's only a couple of my hats.
Oh yeah. Lucky Charms and all those things too. But I don't know what the deal is. My whole system is shut down. So, here's the fun. You want to hear the funny part?
You can't close the show.
I can't close the show either.
You cannot close the show. Hopefully the show is still being recorded and it's still being played, but you can't close the show. So we are going to have a never-ending show today. It's going to be a show about flea markets, corn dogs, funnel cakes. I might just go get every piece of food that I can get out of this place and just spend the rest of my day nom-nomming at the flea market until I pass out from a sugar coma.
That would actually be kind of an interesting story if you went from booth to booth, food booth to food booth at the flea market, and tell us what you find and how the stuff tastes.
Well, the downside is there's two concession stands that they have in the place, because it's mostly an indoor flea market.
Right.
So they have two concession stands, and they have a guy on the end that serves barbecue all the way on the outside. That's really the only food vendors they allow, other than the bold pizza guy. So there's really not, you can get it from a concession stand. It's not really cool. Like, I can't go booth to booth and get, like, I wanted to make fresh pork rinds. So fried fresh pork rinds right at my booth.
I just bought some of those. They call them cracklings.
Cracklings.
Same thing, right?
Not really, but close.
No. Well, I was just curious to say I bought some the other day, because I'm in food packaging business on the side. I was looking at the package that was in, trying to find another alternative package, and those things are good.
Cracklings are awesome. I make crackling cornbread, which is the best cornbread in second best cornbread in the world. But my jalapeno cornbread is the best, but crackling cornbread, sweet corn cornbread, and jalapeno cornbread are my three main cornbreads that I deal with. But crackling cornbread is awesome. If you make a cornbread, add some crackling to the cornbread. Try that.
You actually put the cracklings in the mix, huh? I assume you grind them up, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's going to be small cubes of crackling, but you want to cook that. Drain the fat off, and then add it into your mixture when you cook it in the oven.
Interesting. You got to send me the recipe for that.
I'll send you a recipe.
Send me the recipe. We'll post it on Facebook.
Yeah, I'll send you a recipe for it.
Well,
but since we're talking about this, if you can't close the show, let's continue talking about food. Tomorrow I'm going to smoke a meatloaf.
Okay. Smoke a meatloaf.
Huh? What's a meatloaf? Smoke a meatloaf.
Yep.
That's the plan. Smoke a meatloaf. I'm gonna try smoked meatloaf.
I don't think I've ever had that before. Smoked meatloaf.
Yeah, I mean it's something that I've been talking about for like a couple of weeks, and thanks to my buddy Mike Baxter, I got a new Komodo Joe, ceramic cooker.
Right. Oh,
so
I saw that on Facebook. Is that the one you had on Facebook?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Love that thing. So I've been cooking everything I can get my hands on. It's just, because the cool thing is I can use it as a grill. I can use it as a slow cooker. I can do whatever I want. I'm throwing a couple of chunks of wood. Wow, it's perfect. So, yeah, I'm going to use that thing and smoke a meatloaf. See how it turns out.
Sounds good. Can you hear me in the background trying to reboot?
I do. I've heard it like 15 times.
This is sad. This is live radio at its best right here.
Listen.
Walmart. I think my screen has actually just died on this computer. I mean, I can hear it coming on. I can see everything. I can see things, but like outlines, but I can't. But there's no background light.
It may have died, or it may have come unplugged.
Oh my God! Oh well, you know, I know how to
check. You should check your connect. Check the connection from the computer to the screen, or is it a laptop or is it a computer?
It's a laptop.
Oh, yeah, never mind. Your screen might have died.
Never mind, you're screwed.
Never mind, you're done. Yeah.
Well, I know how to close up the show. I just realized all I have to do is cut off the phone line, which connects us to the show, and actually then I can I guess cut the show off. It'll be an unending show. It'll just go on.
It'll
forever.
Be an unending show. It'll be going forever. It's just the show that never is.
It goes on and on, my friend. All right, well, you enjoy yourself over there at the flea market. Thank you for calling in. It was fun. And everybody who's listening, sorry we had these technical difficulties today, but I'm going to have to figure this out or buy a new laptop or something. And next week we have a big show planned. We have Saberici coming on with her recipes for love, and I know Aaron likes those. And Katarina coming on.
Saberici.
Katarina's coming on with her sexy Christmas desserts. Next week, and so we have Laurie coming back with her food news, and then we have a chef whose name is Hoss Zare, and Hoss Zare is actually well known up in Northern California, and he's going to be coming on. He's got an interesting guy. So next week, that's the plan if my system works and I can see the screen. And we appreciate everybody's support. We keep growing every week, and even through all the shenanigans and buffoonery that we do, we still seem to have more and more listeners every week. So thank you for everyone's support. And Aaron, thank you. And I guess I'm going to sign off by just shutting down the phone line and hope and pray that the radio show cuts off at that point.
All right, brother. Call me later. Let me know how that ends.
All right, everybody, take care. This is Brilliant Ideas and Aaron, and we're saying goodbye. Everyone have a nice weekend.